So we have, we're coming to the end of the chapter, which talks about the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. If you know Jagannath Puri, you know there's a long road between the main temple and the Gundicha temple where the Lord is taken for how long? A week? A week or so? It's a week? And then comes the Hera Panchami festival where Lakshmi Devi, very irritated that the Lord has stayed away from home for such a long time, as a good wife, she says, "Where's my husband? He's not here." And she comes with her servants, and the servants of Lady Lakshmi get the servants of Jagannath to bow down in supplication. "You have kept our Lord away from his lady for too long. Now you must pay the price." They're beaten. It's all play acting. There's no beating. So this is the festival. And at the end of this festival, then Jagannath makes his return journey. But before all of this takes place, there's a lot of preparation. Sometimes the preparations we talk about, sometimes not. It's like sometimes... Oh, I see. Sometimes rituals we describe, just like I was in my house today and I have to do so many rituals before coming here to the temple. Like being an elder Brahmin, so many rituals I have to do. So many things. I have to scrape the ice off the windscreen. I have to start the car and let it run for 2 minutes. I have to get on my coat, my hat. Then I have to put the glove on my right hand, the glove on my left hand. So many rituals. Prabhupada was in an airport. Their faces, they wondered where this was going. I thought, oh, we're going to get something really esoteric here today. He's going to reveal that which has not been revealed before. The ancient art of scraping the window. Prabhupada was in an airport in Atlanta. He was being interviewed by a reporter. And devotee, because Prabhupada was hot, devotee picked up a newspaper and was fanning Prabhupada with a newspaper. And the reporter was taking pictures and making notes. He said, "Swamiji, could you explain what is this ritual that is being undertaken here?" Prabhupada just looked at him as if he was stupid, which he was. He said, "It is hot. He is fanning me." So, sometimes we think the life of a devotee is all ritual. That's true. But some of the rituals are, what we might say, mundane, and some are very specific to developing love for Krishna. One is called Gaunavidhi Bhakti. Gaunavidhi Bhakti means the bhakti that you perform, which is within the modes of nature. Just like, I don't know if you know this, but I had a shower before I came here today. Now that showering is one of the Gaunavidhi Bhakti practices that I do. Do you also shower as well? It's one of the Gaunavidhi Bhakti practices, which means that it's something that you do in order to do bhakti. We don't talk about it much, except to tell people that you should shower. But the idea is that so many people are showering. The gentleman who lives next door to me and his wife, they both take showers in the morning, but it's not bhakti, because what comes after their gona practices is not bhakti. However, if I shower, then I engage in bhakti afterwards. That makes the shower Gaunavidhi Bhakti. Everything is changed by the addition of bhakti practices. When we do our job and we add bhakti practices, our job becomes our karma yoga, our way of connecting. So, in these verses, we're finding out about what happens before. And what happens before is, of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers who've come from Bengal, they clean the temple. Why is it necessary to clean the temple? Because cleaning a temple is something that you do to make it a fit place to worship the Lord. To It's like if you want to worship the Lord in your heart, you clean your heart. Everything should be clean. What is clean? Clean means when it is free from extraneous material. It's a concept of purification. Purification means to return a substance to its original form, to remove the impurities. That which is making something pure, impure is the impurity. So those substances have to be removed. Prabhupada was in a temple one time in Hyderabad. He was very annoyed because he saw the remnants of last night's prasadam still on the ground. He said, "You're not cleaning the temple properly." He would get annoyed at unclean temples. And the temple commander came and tried to make some excuses. And all the devotees came and they started trying to dig out the impacted rice, because some of it was from yesterday, some of it was from the week before, and some of it was from a month before. It was India. Impacted rice, one of the big problems in any temple. Impacted rice and what? What else? Haldi and the yellow stain and kumkum. Kumkum is one of the messiest things on God's earth. And I do not know why. Very few ladies wear it now. I'm pleased to see that. Kumkum is such a messy thing. It gets everywhere. The male equivalent is pan. It just gets everywhere. India has come up with these two chemicals which immediately lead to lack of purity. So you have to remove all this. So the devotees were panicking. And they were getting spoons to dig out the rice and knives to dig out the rice. Prabhupada was pointing to it. He said, and one temple commander came and he said, "Don't worry, Srila Prabhupada, I've got a knife." And Prabhupada just said, "Save it for your throat." I mean, Swamiji, you're supposed to be peaceful. He writes so much about peace, but he was angry about dirt. Also angry about quality of prasadam. You know what he said on the same trip? He took a look at the khichdi, tasted the khichdi. He said, "This is dog food." So kitchen standards, kitchen cleanliness, and what comes out of the kitchen, very important. Anyway, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the devotees from Bengal were there for a few months, cleaned the temple very thoroughly. They clean it once, twice, three times. And having cleaned their hearts by the cleaning of the temple, they go to see Jagannath. But in this particular section, which I've been given to comment on, we find that when they see Jagannath, they don't just take darshan, as we might say, but they actually have darshan, and there's a difference. So that's what I thought we could focus on. So where are we? Text 13, 2:13. Yeah? Oh, you've got it up there. No one told me. I was expecting you to... Okay, all right, okay. I'll read through it. Bandulila Pula Jini Adara Suranga. If you like. There's no purport, but feel free. If you want to practice your very bad Bengali, that's good. Ishatasita Kanti Amrita Taranga. The chin of the Lord, tinged with buff color, conquered the beauty of the Banduli flower. This increased the beauty of his mild smiling, which was like the lustrous waves of nectar. Please repeat. The chin of the Lord, tinged with buff color, conquered the beauty of the Banduli flower. This increased the beauty of his mild smiling, which was like lustrous waves of nectar. It's traditional not to say too much about a verse that doesn't have a purport, but one thing I wanted to say about this was that Bandhuli flower. I looked it up. I thought, the Bandhuli flower must be a buff color. And the buff color of the Lord's chin must therefore conquer the Bandhuli flower. I looked up. Bandhuli is called Ixora Banduka. It's a red flower made of very small flowers. It's crimson, actually. So then I thought, how is that? You've seen it, but we don't. It's an Indian flower, of course, Bandhuli flower. Ixora Banduka. You can look it up. And for the life of me, I could not understand, what does it mean that the Lord's chin is tinged with a buff color? You know the color buff? It's a sort of this bland brown, yellow, sort of buff. So that's yellowy brown. So how is it that Lord Jagannath's chin is... I mean, this is a genuine question. I meant to tell you the answer, but I don't have the answer, I'm afraid. Why is the Lord's chin buff color? I can only my imaginings. Sometimes the white of Lord Jagannath goes off color, doesn't it? Goes off color. Isn't it? But his smile, which is red, has conquered the beauty of the Bandhuli flower. Main thing here, that it increased the beauty of his mild smiling, which was like the lustrous waves of nectar. So in these few verses, we're going to see how the devotees look at Jagannath, look at the Lord, and they feel very attracted. And this is quite curious because in one sense, the form of Jagannath is very simple. And you will find in some of the comments from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, if you go to see Lord Jagannath, and you don't see with eyes of devotion, premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena, and eyes tinged with the salve of love of God, if you don't have those eyes, you will see, oh, here is a form which is meant to be Krishna, but it's only half made. Here is a form of Krishna, which is, what did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati say? Which is stunted, no fully formed arms. So if you're looking for a figure of grace and beauty, and you look at Lord Jagannath, you may be disappointed, unless you can see with the eyes of love. So that's a little bit of a heads up to what's being discussed. Next one, please. 214. Shri Mukasundara Kanti Vade Kshane Kshane. Koti Bhakta Netra Bringa Kari Madhubane. The luster of his beautiful face increased at every moment. And the eyes of the hundreds and thousands of devotees drank its honey like bumblebees. So bumblebees, they look for nectar in the flowers, and the nectar becomes honey, and they also drink that too. So they're looking everywhere. They have a very great thirst for one particular substance. So devotees are like bees. Sometimes when you come into the temple in the morning, it sounds like a beehive, doesn't it? They're looking at the Lord. How is it that the luster of the beautiful face increases at every moment? Because as devotees, we are experiencing waves of nectar. Waves of nectar. Why is it called a wave of nectar? You must have experienced that. A wave of nectar. You're there. Krishna is there. In one of any form. You experience a feeling. And the feeling has a peak. And then the feeling dies down. Isn't it? It's a wave of nectar. Where it comes from, you don't know. Can you control it? You think you can. But you can't control it. It comes unbidden, unannounced. Hello, I'm a wave of nectar. Get ready. Whoosh, splash. Oh my God, where did that come from? It must be the way I'm chanting this morning. No. Must be that I'm a nice guy, girl. Must be that I'm a really good devotee. No, don't go for it. Because you'll have to wait such a long time before you get the next wave of nectar. As soon as pride comes, we call that tarangarangini. A wave came. It was only a tiny wave. A wavelet. And you started to enjoy it. Means enjoy. Tarangarangini means enjoying the surf. So you were standing on the beach of disconsolate devotion. A little wave came, tickled your feet, and you went, I've been given prem. Look at me, everybody look at me. I'm a special person. No. You'll have to wait longer now. Further back, get further back on the beach. 2:15, please. Yatapi etata trishna bade nirantara mukambuja charinetra naya yantara. As the eyes began to drink the nectarian honey of his lotus face, their thirst increased. Thus their eyes did not leave him. In the Lago Bhagavatamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami has described the beauty of the Lord in this way. Asamanordva madhurya tarangamrita varidihi jangamastavarolasi rupo gopendra nandana. The beauty of the son of Maharaj Nanda is incomparable. Nothing is higher than his beauty, and nothing can equal it. His beauty is like waves in an ocean of nectar. This beauty is attractive both for moving and non-moving objects. Similarly, in the Tantra Shastra, there is another description of the Lord's beauty. Kandarpa koti arbuddha rupa shobha niraja padabja nakam chalasya kutrapya drishta shutaramya kanter dhyanang param nanda sutasya vakshe. I shall relate the supreme meditation upon Lord Sri Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj. The tips of the toes of his lotus feet reflect the beauty of the bodies of the unlimited millions of cupids, and his bodily luster has never been seen or heard of anywhere. One may also consult Srimad Bhagavatam 10, 29, 14 in this connection. Well, I looked it up. Obviously, being a curious chap, 10:29:14 is the following. Narinam ni shreyas artaya vyaktir bhagavato nripa avyayasya aprameyasya nirgunasya gunatmana, which means, O King, the Supreme Lord is inexhaustible and immeasurable. Oh, look. How did you do that so quickly? Wow. Some days you can't get the board and now it's all AI. He is untouched by the material modes because he's their controller. His personal appearance in this world is meant for bestowing the highest benefit on humanity. So here we see two things going on. Because Krishna is above the modes of material nature. Therefore, when you connect with Krishna, you are lifted above the modes of material nature. Sometimes people say, why is it when I chant the syllables, Ha, Re, Krishna, Rama, that I'm lifted above the modes of material nature? Something's going on. I know something must be going on. That is because those syllables inculcate the uncontaminated state of transcendence, which is Krishna, because Krishna is the same as his name. If that was not the case, then the name of Krishna would not produce an effect, just those syllables would not produce an effect. Because a syllable, what is a syllable? A syllable is just your tongue wagging, and the tongue is a muscle. It's wagging in your mouth, which is another bone lined with muscle and cartilage. The air molecules are made of oxygen and nitrogen and a bit of hydrogen, and they're vibrating, but they're material. The bones in your ear are also material. So where's the spirituality in any of that? Surely it's more spiritual to sit in meditation and silence. That's spiritual. So let's do that for the next 20 minutes. Hari Om. No, we don't believe that. We do believe that matter becomes spiritualized when it is contacted by the supreme transcendence. That ordinary matter becomes beautiful when it is contacted or put into contact with the supreme transcendence. That's where our philosophy comes from, so that you can be in the world and contacting Krishna. And whatever you do can be elevated to the supreme state of meditation. Even fighting. There's a connection between fighting and dancing. What's the connection? Of course, if you go to the martial arts of Japan, and Korea, and China, you'll often see that the fighting looks like dancing. And sometimes dancing can be fighting because you're moving the body in a way which is pleasing and graceful, but is focusing power. Don't forget that Arjuna was also a dance teacher. And he was the best fighter, best dancer, best teacher. Anyway, just a little aside. So I was thinking, what should I say today? The Lord comes in different forms. The Lord comes in these different forms so that we can make the invisible visible. That's the whole point. We're contacting transcendence, but we also want to see transcendence. We also want to have the complete darshan. So what is darshan? It means coming into the presence of the divine, having an audience, seeing God. There are other meanings, and I'll get to the end. We'll talk about those. But what we're doing, we're having darshan by accepting God's invitation that he becomes visible to our mundane eyes, our mundane sense of touch, our mundane ears, thereby purifying our senses and allowing us to see him in what appears to be matter, but which becomes transcendence when it's connected to him. So in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, and he talks about different ways in which the Lord, he himself, becomes manifest in the world. And he talks about the fire sacrifice. Talks about the fire sacrifice, that in the flames we should see Vishnu. Vishnu Jiva. Narayan Jiva. In other words, that when you see that, there's so many fires. So many fires. Fire is the most common thing. One of those common things. Fire, water, air, and earth. These are the most common things. Everybody touches them, tastes them, smells them, etc. And a flower, leaves, very common. But to connect them to the transcendental, Krishna gives his directions. So when you light this fire and you say this, followed by this, followed by this, you should know that it's me. And the offerings made into this fire, I will accept them. One time, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and he was looking out. This is the Krishna Balaram temple. He said there was thousands of people there. They were just packing the temple, and Prabhupada was very pleased because it had become one of the most popular temples in Vrindavan in a very short time. So it was opened in 75. By 76, it was just packed, jam-packed. And it stayed jam-packed for the last 50 years. He said, why is everybody coming here? And then he named a few other competing places. He said, why? Which, for the sake of history, I can't remember. Why are they not going there, but they're coming here? Devotees didn't quite know how to answer. He says, because Krishna says, I eat, ashnami, I eat. And we believe that. We treat Krishna as if Krishna was personally present. We feed him. Therefore, he comes and he eats. We make this connection between the devotee and the deity. So that is why everyone is coming here. Because when they see Krishna, Krishna is there. Devotees have brought him here. They're feeding him. They're keeping him here with their love. He said, when they go there, they may talk of Krishna, but no one is interested. No one is going because they do not believe that Krishna can eat. Anyway. So if Krishna says, I eat through the sacrifice, through the fire sacrifice, then we should believe him. There's a current trend in ISKCON these days to think that a fire sacrifice is quote-unquote Hindu Shmindu. Or something that Prabhupada didn't want all these. The hand goes up and the hand makes this gesture. Yeah, many devotees say this. Prabhupada didn't want all these rituals. Okay, this is the Prabhupada didn't want these things ritual. Gesture. Try it. Let me train you in the gentle art. Shake your hand. Prabhupada didn't want all these rituals. Okay? Say it after me. Prabhupada didn't want all these rituals. Prabhupada only wanted Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, so what are you going to do in the 11th canto then, when it says that Krishna wants all these rituals? Okay. All these rituals means he does not want rituals in which the pure bhakti is not generated. When you do a ritual and it is just for the ritual, it is possible to be attached to doing a ritual just for the sake of ritual. There was a lady came here, she was a professor from Winchester University, and she wanted to discuss ritual with me. And because she couldn't get a reply from any of the other devotees, because she was here from Mangalarti all the way through to breakfast. She said, Kripa Moya, I have a question. I said, yes, feel free. She said, well, when I talk to the devotees about the rituals that they do in the morning program, they tell me that they don't do rituals. But they come in temple, they sing the same song at the same time, they bow down at the same time, they throw petals on the guru's feet at the same time, they take sacred liquid at the same time, saying the same words, they ring the bell at the same time, they sing the same songs. They all attend the same ritual. She said, which part of that is not ritual? I said, what they mean is that they don't perform empty ritual. They don't perform empty ritual. When devotees hear the word ritual, they think empty ritual. Ritual which is devoid of love. But actually we do a lot of rituals. From the putting on of your tilak in the morning, to the showering, to the scraping the car, to get here. There's so many rituals. But we focus on the point that we want those rituals, which are a ritual is any act performed regularly in conformity to a description. We always try to do it the right way, don't we? And we come in the temple, and the ritual is, don't fail to bow down. You must bow down on two hands. The head must touch the floor, etc., etc., these descriptions. So we're very, very prescriptive in how we do our rituals. But the point is, devotees do them with love. Anyway, fire yagyas. Then Krishna says, you can also worship me in the mandala. What's a mandala? Or as people say, Mandela. No, that was the former president of South Africa. Or they use the slightly Buddhistic, they go, mandala. No, it's not mandala, and it's not Mandela. It's mandala. Mandala, as in Rasa Mandala. So, which is a geometric design that the sadhu, who doesn't have any access to any deity worship, he will draw on a beach or the bank of a river. The idea is if you're a sannyasi, I know, Maharaj, that you do this every day. When you wake up on Hampstead Heath or Clapham Common or wherever you found a tree that you can sleep under, you go to the bank of the lake. You take your bath in the freezing water, first smashing the ice, You're laughing, but you don't know what he goes through to get here every morning. And then you take a twig, you snap a twig off a tree and you brush your teeth. You take another twig and you draw a sacred mandala on the ground. You touch various points on the star of the mandala and you invoke different mantras. And in the middle of the mandala, with your tilak finger, you place the sacred deity that you're worshipping. That's another way, Krishna says. Because what's happening, you're seeing the lines on the ground. And with your intelligence, you're seeing Krishna in the mantra. And then you're seeing Krishna through that mandala. That's another way. What is the other way, Krishna says? The kumbha, the kalash. Or as devotees in ISKCON call it, the sacred coconut. Coconuts are not sacred. There's not a species of coconut that we can find. Oh, this is no, that's an ordinary coconut tree. Now look, I see a sacred coconut on that sacred coconut tree. Let's pick that one. Coconut is made sacred. What is the kumbha? It's the urn or the vase surmounted by the coconut with a coronet of leaves, which is invoked with the deity of your choice. So anything from Krishna to Gauranga to Vishwakshena to Shiva, depending who you're worshipping, can be invoked. What's the idea? Well, the idea is that a pot could be easily found anywhere, water can be found anywhere, leaves can be found anywhere, coconut can be found with great difficulty sometimes, especially if Tesco's is not open. And the initiation ceremony has to take place early in the morning during class. But in ordinary equatorial life, coconut will be there. So even a poor man can construct a kumbha. The idea is that the Lord is invoked in these material elements. And finally, stone, granite, marble, wood, mud can be shaped to form the deity of the Lord. And perform the avahana and stapana mudras and the visarjana mudras when we've finished. The whole point is, my dear Lord, I invite you to come here. Prabhu kripaya swagatam kuru. I invite you to come here. Please come. Please stay. I will worship you. Now, these are all temporary forms of worshiping Krishna. The permanent form of worshiping Krishna is where we say, my dear Lord, please come, please stay. We will never send you away. We will never move from this spot. Let you be here for thousands of years. That is why you can go to India and you will find places that have been there for thousands of years where the Lord has been worshipped in that spot according to the same rites. But the point is, in all of this, is that we have to see God by invoking his presence, and that takes jnana, that takes knowledge. Without that knowledge of what you're doing, nothing will be there. You'll be stuck with a coconut, which would be very nice, but it won't be very sacred. I've seen fire sacrifices in which the devotee brings a coconut, puts it on a pot, and that's it, because that's what it's supposed to look. You're supposed to have a coconut on a pot. I don't know why. No, something's supposed to happen. It's like saying we're supposed to burn some sticks for an initiation yagya. We're supposed to burn some sticks. Well, I don't know. No one told me that you're supposed to put ghee in it. Or I didn't know there was any mantras. This is as Kali Yuga progresses, the knowledge of why we do things will be lost. So at the end of Kali Yuga, the only thing will be the holy name of Krishna and Jagannath's two big eyes. At the end of Kali Yuga, that's all that's there. I don't know whose eyes they are, but they look like eyes. Okay. Anyway, Prabhupada said in 1966, philosophy means to see intelligently. What you can see with your eyes, philosophy allows you to see through and above what you're seeing. Just like those magic eye. Remember the magic eye pictures? You looked at the magic eye picture and it was just jumbled up design. And then you reframed your vision and automatically a dolphin pops out, a 3D dolphin pops out, or 3D. Just like that. Here's a coconut, here's a pot, here's a statue of Krishna, here's a flame, here's a mandala. Now I can see Krishna through it because the four-dimensional has popped out of the two-dimensional or three dimensions. We can only work in two or three dimensions. Krishna's on the fourth dimension, so how will I see him? Krishna will allow Krishna to take part. If one has bhakti, Prabhupada said it is like when a mother sees her child's shoe. The child is not there, but she sees the little baby booty, little woolen booties. Immediately the mother thinks, oh. She thinks of her child and imagines the whole child with the foot fitting into the booty. You just see that. So we would call this, tadiya, udipan, a stimulus to love. Okay. So the point is, we can see Krishna everywhere with bhakti. First there is jnana, and through jnana we develop the bhakti. Anyway, in 1975, Prabhupada said, how you will see Krishna? Sevan mokehi jivado. Krishna can only be seen by service, beginning with the tongue. When you serve Krishna. And through that service, see, it doesn't make sense to the mind. It doesn't make sense that through service I can see something that previously I could not see. It doesn't make any sense at all. You see, it doesn't make any sense at all. But if a boy loves a girl and he wants her to love him, he has to perform service. There has to be flowers. There has to be nice places. Right? Young gentleman there. There has to be chocolates. There has to be a ring. There has to be nice things presented. And then the love will develop. So in bhakti, it's the same thing. You see Krishna, what is the relationship? The relationship is service. It's not, well, I'll wait until Krishna serves me. Then if Krishna serves me, and I can absolutely see that Krishna is serving me in some way in my life, when my needs have been met, then I'll believe in Krishna. Then maybe I'll start to develop some appreciation, gratitude, ultimately love. Most people do that, don't they? Well, you know, I'll hold on to my faith until you guys at the temple prove to me that Krishna helped my auntie when she was sick. And if your auntie dies, then there's no Krishna. Sorry, we can't do miracles with your auntie when your time is up. Time is up. So, in the story of the Supreme Lord helped the materialistic devotees of the Lord to defeat the demons. This is a story told in the Kena Upanishad. But as soon as he'd helped them, they became proud. This is what demigod is. The difference between a demigod and a devotee. The demigods know that the Supreme Lord exists, but at the same time, they want something that he can give them. Therefore, when he gives it, they have a tendency to become proud. So he appeared before them as a yaksha. He was in disguise. So first of all, Agni comes. And there's the Lord in the form of a yaksha. He says, who are you? He says, I'm Agni. He says, well, what can you do? He says, I can do everything. I can burn anything. He said, he put a piece of straw on the ground. He said, well, burn the straw. Agni, the supreme deity of fire. One piece of straw, nothing. He went away. Then comes Vayu. Vayu, what can you do? I can blow things, create storms. I am the air, even within people's bodies. He said, blow that piece of straw. Where did the straw didn't move. He went away dejected. Then Indra came and the yaksha disappeared. Indra says, where's he gone? And Uma came. And he said, where is he? Oh, that was the Supreme Lord. He He said, ah, yes, now I understand. So the understanding is that Agni is Jataveda, Vayu is Matarishva, but Indra, he's displaying the principle of accepting a guru. And Uma, in this case, was his guru. She's associated with Shiva. So Kena Upanishad explains this. And in order to see Krishna, you have to go through the agency of a person that will help you to see what is really there. And to do that, you have to become free from pride. Lord Ramachandra said that when pride has been lost, pridelessness opens the gate to Vaikuntha. If you can become free from pride, you become eligible for Vaikuntha. Can you stay for 5 more minutes, Maharaj? Because there's some good stories, okay? So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati started the first temple, when was it, 1918? Chaitanya Math. And he installed the deities of Gandharvika Giridhari in Navadvip. One day he was standing, taking darshan, but he didn't have his specs on. And the disciples knew that without his spectacles, he couldn't see very far. And he was standing some distance. They said, Guru Maharaj, shall I go and get your spectacles? You won't be able to see the deities. He said, I am seeing them, but the more important is that they are seeing me. This is the real meaning of darshan, that I'm presenting myself before them. In Jagannath Puri, which was another of his temples, he said, let us all stand by Garuda. Garuda is also some distance from Jagannath. It is because Garuda is the supreme Vaishnava, then Jagannath will look at Garuda, and as he looks at Garuda, he may also see us. And this will be the perfection of darshan. Nice, huh? He said, Jagannath is not drishya, that which is seen. But Jagannath is drishta, the seer. Only when the jiva gives up the idea that he is the drishta, or the seer, will he be able to see the Lord. You see, the different forms of devotional practice mentioned in the Tantra, which Lord Krishna explains to Uddhava, these are all ways in which we can take a material object, infuse it with the sacred presence, and see the Lord. But we're still using our eyes. And the tendency will be to think, I drew that. I drew that mandala. Therefore, I control it. That's something I did. I chanted those holy names. That's my japa. I'm in control of this. You see? I burned these wood. This is my, I started this fire. I did that. See, the tendency to control, to take proprietorship, take a sense that I'm enjoying this, is so deeply rooted that it's very difficult to control. Therefore, we have to have that removed by higher agency. Someone came, he says, yes, this is what I wanted to say. The disciple came to him and said, I want to see Bhagavan in this lifetime, Guru Maharaj. But the point is, he says, well, he says, you want to see Bhagavan. Better that you work in such a way that Bhagavan can see you. This was a standard reply. This is where our Prabhupada gets us from. So we try to capture Krishna by taking a picture on our iPhone 15. Therefore, you go to any temple in India now, instead of the hands in prayer or in the Gaudiya Vaishnav hands like this in jubilant, drinking in the nectar of the Lord's face, we'll whip out the iPhone. Why are you taking a photograph? The photograph, you're not performing darshan. You should be thinking to yourself, I have such pride. Why can't I see the Lord in front of me right now? Okay, instead, what business is it to take a picture of Krishna? Why are you doing that? So we try to do that. Let me control Krishna. I will have the darshan, and I will share the darshan with others. No, you're not sharing anything. you're sharing some forms and some colors. Okay. Let me go in front of Krishna and judge the outfits. I will judge the outfit. I will judge the head pujarian whether he or she has made nice arrangements for the Lord. I will be the adjudicator. Those flowers could be moved along a little bit. Yeah, I don't think he's done the, you know, I don't think he's done this right or that right. Or, yes, this has been done for my pleasure today. I like the way that Krishna is. Yesterday, not so much, but today, I am enjoying Krishna. Well, I'm sorry, that's not darshan. Therefore, a devotee is counseled, don't look Krishna in the face when you're taking darshan until you've taken darshan of Krishna's feet. Look from the feet upwards. Otherwise, this controlling tendency immediately takes over instead of standing in awe. Let me receive Mahaprasadam and talk about the recipes. No, it's supreme transcendence that's going into your mouth. Well, I like this, but I think there's a little bit too much sugar in this. In other words, you're reducing it to the material object from which it was constructed, not elevating it to the supreme act of mercy that is coming your way. Okay? Or we have puja in our homes, in which we hope to see Krishna in our homes. And I'm a great fan of telling people to worship Krishna at home. I've spent my whole life telling people, worship Krishna at home. But the tendency at home is, it's my home. Krishna's part of my family. Or even if people have, you know, so they choose a form of Krishna which most meets their desire. Traditionally, the form of Krishna is given by the guru. But as disciples, sometimes we want to have a form of Krishna that pleases me and my family. And even if we take Shalagram Shila, we'll stick on eyes that look like Barbie or little brats or whatever it is. We'll try and sentimentalize the worship of the Lord. To be very careful of that, because it means I'm pulling Krishna down to my level of enjoyment and control rather than allowing myself to be elevated to him, which is the reason, I think, now we don't talk of installing deities, do we, anymore? We just talk of welcoming, isn't it? All over this tradition of welcoming the deities. Welcoming means if I want to worship them, I can. And when I don't want to worship them, then I don't have to. Well, isn't that an easy cop-out? That's much easier for you, isn't it? Easy way. Installation means you've got to worship Krishna every day. Well, I'll be a devotee, but I won't be initiated. That's easy for you, isn't it? Yeah, you know, when I want to chant, I'll chant. And when I don't want to chant, then I won't chant. It's easier for me that way. Well, why not allow yourself to follow the principle of being elevated rather than bringing it down? We want to bring Krishna within our domain. So someone came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And a man said, while sitting on the riverside, on the riverbank yesterday, I saw Krishna. Srila Saraswati Thakur asked him, did you not also see Maya? If you are still seeing Maya today, it means you did not see Krishna yesterday. You must have seen a ghost. The test of seeing Krishna is to no longer be interested in Maya. Anyone can say he has seen Krishna, but Rupa Goswami says, my dear friend, if you are attached to your worldly friends, don't look at the smiling face of Govinda as he stands on the bank of the Yamuna at Keshi Ghat. Casting sidelong glances, he places his flute to his freshly blossoming lips. His transcendental body, bending in three places, appears very bright in the moonlight. So if you are still attached to Maya, you could not have seen Govinda. For if you had really seen Govinda, you could no longer remain attached to Maya. He's a hammer guru. So one day a very wealthy landlord, a very wealthy landlord came to him and he said, He leaned in, he was sitting at some function, and he leaned across to him and he said, "Guruji, have you seen Bhagavan? Have you yourself? Have you seen him?" Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, "If I tell you whether I've seen him or whether I haven't seen him, how will it help you? How will it help you? May you believe or not believe. My job is to help you to move forward in your life." Then in a lecture, he was giving a lecture on the 10th of November, 1936, in Jagannath Puri, which fits in very nicely with these verses. 1936, long time ago. And he explained the subtle difference between seeing the Lord for our personal pleasure and being seen by him. And I'll finish after this. "I see the statue. This kind of thinking is in the spirit of enjoyment, whereas the deity sees me. My uncovered pure self is deity darshan. If in the same way that I see a film, a drama, or gymnastic display, or hear a song, I think, I can see the deity with my eyes and fathom him by my intelligence. Such an attempt will be on the material platform. One will derive no benefit from such inclinations not meant for satisfying the Lord's senses. Faith in the Lord entails not having faith in mundane enjoyment or in mundane renunciation. If one has faith in this world, then that is his bhoga enjoyment. The objects of the world are for my enjoyment. Such a mentality is due to not having initiation and spiritual knowledge." Hare Krishna.